It's politics and more, and it's only on News Talk 770 AM, 92.5 FM, WVNN. Depend on it.
Radio has changed our lives and possibly saved our lives.
Good morning, Tennessee Valley, and you are tuned in to Politics and More. I'm your host here at Politics and More, Shannon Moore, and let's get to our opening thoughts today. The economy will likely take center stage next year as we focus on the midterm races. They're going to become very prominent in political circles next year. And as we all know, in politics, voters traditionally focus on the economy as one of their main reasons to vote. And the left has typically capitalized on this and argued that the left most cares about an individual's ability to put food on the table. And this has been one of the left's usual talking points for years, and it will likely be used for years to come. Now, this time around, this year specifically, as inflation has skyrocketed, gas prices have dramatically risen, and the market remains apprehensive, the left has had to refocus their attention on coming up with new arguments for why this is not necessarily their fault. As we witness a new problem, supply chain issues becoming widespread, and a dramatic backup at the California docks, worries about how this will impact Christmas have risen. Now, whatever the case, the economic impact of many of these issues will likely continue to resonate in America and with regard to the health of the American economy next year. There will be essentially two ways the left will respond. Either they will try to downplay the situation, or, as they are often fond of doing, suggest that this is a time to tax the rich to make them pay for their fair share. Either way, the left continues to push away from the principles of capitalism and the embrace of economic success in order to embrace essentially the mediocrity of a socialist-based economy, which essentially produces very few, if any, success stories. And to help us discuss these issues today, I have one of our frequent guests in studio, Anson Knowles. Anson is chairman of the Madison County Young Republicans. He's run for office himself and been very much involved in politics for many years. Good morning, Anson.
Good morning, Shannon. And it's a pleasure to be on your show once again. And thanks for the warm intro there. And like you said, the Madison County Young Republicans are 18 to 40 year olds. So I'm on the upper end of that. So young I am not, but chairman of the Young Republicans I am.
Yes, Anson, and you know, we go way back. I remember when you were running for school board. I guess it's been about 7 or 8 years ago now, maybe longer.
Yeah, it's been about 7 years, 8 years, yeah.
But you have been very much involved in politics for many years, and you know, even riding over here, we were discussing a lot of the of issues that are going on out there in America. I mean, it used to be, I think, that politics was, you know, maybe thought of by the average American from that 5:30 to 6 o'clock segment when you watch the nightly news. But now it kind of pervades most facets of American life and culture, whether you want it to or not.
Well, but the normies, the people out there that don't pay attention to politics like us, they get their politics through entertainment. So even they're inundated, even if they don't realize it. So you're absolutely right.
Well, yeah, it really does. You know, it really does impact almost all facets of America now. And you know, I've pointed out that, because you bring up a good point, a lot of people who may not actually have an interest in politics, they really get inundated by politics most anytime they turn on the television, even if it's non-political related shows.
Well, the problem is that there's enough people out there smart enough to hear the talking points that are fed to them, even though they're not really paying attention. They're smart enough. They're midwits. You know, they're not really smart. They're not dumb. They're right there in the middle. And so they're smart enough to recite the talking points that are fed to them. And it's extremely dangerous, and it's really harming our culture. And really, I think that's one of the reasons why the explosion of socialist thought has really happened in our country over the past 10 years.
Well, and we're going to talk about one of the segments, especially about the push towards socialist thought. But, you know, entertainment probably is one of the most innocuous yet – and this is kind of why I often emphasize that for conservatives to make a difference in the world – sometimes one of the best ways is to focus on entertainment, because again, I mean, it does have so much of an impact on us, whether we intend it to or not. I mean, everybody, you know, most people watch TV at some point in the day. Most people enjoy watching movies. And so, you know, we're often, you know, inundated with messages through entertainment. And so if conservatives want to get their messages out there, entertainment, storytelling is actually an important way to do that.
Well, yeah, and you mentioned that, and this past week, Dave Chappelle's comedy special came out, and he kind of pushed back against some of the, well, what you're talking about, the conservatives need to take over entertainment. Well, the problem is that every time somebody with a conservative thought or a thought that goes against the liberal message, every time one of those people stands up in Hollywood, they get knocked down. It's a game of whack-a-mole. And really, Dave Chappelle this week opened up the door for comedians a little bit to be able to express themselves. So it was actually a big week in the fight against cancel culture and the fight for the minds of the normies.
Yeah, and that is kind of an interesting point, because, you know, I mean, Dave Chappelle is probably very far left on the political spectrum, but even he pushed back against the rise of cancel culture, which has been very much pushed by the far left. But, you know, the dangers of cancel culture, it's just kind of like a forest fire. You don't really control it. It just spreads.
Well, yeah, and you know, we should play a Dave Chappelle clip on here. Well, no, you'd have to expletive delete the entire clip, but...
Yeah, I don't know. There's probably plenty of places one can look one up if you're interested in that.
Yeah, did you ever watch his old show, the Dave Chappelle Show?
Yeah, there's a lot of stuff that...
Oh, that's hilarious.
Yeah. The you know... Thinking about Dave Chappelle and comedy in general, I don't know if you've probably noticed this, Anson, but there is actually a less comedic movies out there on the market today than I think there probably was 5-10 years ago. And it really may actually kind of be the blowback from cancel culture. That,
well, Yakov Smirnoff came from the Soviet Union. He was a comedian over there. He came over here. He was really successful. And if you listen to his life story and what he said about comedy in a socialist communist country, it can't exist. And that's part of the problem. That's one of the symptoms of cancel culture you're talking about, is this transition into a less free society, because it's going to be a less funny society.
Yeah, and that's kind of why, again, I've emphasized that one of the industries that I think conservatives often overlook, well, we don't overlook it, we complain about it, but there's not that much that has been done about it, is the entertainment industry. And, you know, the entertainment industry is a humongous industry. So there's actually billions of dollars that flow into that. But it's still a free market industry. Money, conservative money needs to be in that industry helping push conservative programming, essentially, to counteract the essentially very far left message of a lot of people in Hollywood. Because we think of actors and actresses, and there's just very few of them that come to mind who I could say are Republicans or conservatives, or really independents or everything. So we're going to take a quick break. We're going to be back with more here on Politics and More. Stay tuned. All right, we're back with Politics and More, and I'm your host, Shannon Moore, here at Politics and More, and we're joined today by Anson Knowles, longtime political activist and chairman of the Madison County Young Republicans. And Anson, we were just before the break talking about the power of Hollywood in politics, because no matter whether you like politics or don't like politics, we in America are constantly bombarded with political messages. And for us conservatives, we're often, unfortunately, bombarded by very left-wing political messages from the entertainment industry, which includes, TV and movies, and also, obviously, the song industry or whatnot. And you know, that's probably another reason why those make up most of our entertainment. Of course, you've got sports, but that's also why so many people have complained that at least keep sports non-political. But either way, the whole thing is politics has so much pervaded entertainment that, you know, for conservatives, that's one way to kind of...
Well, I don't think it should be non-political. I think there should be... You say whatever you want. You know, like Tom Brady, you know, wearing his Trump hat, you know, or, you know, stuff like that. You know, we need to just, you know, understand that if you express an opinion that other people don't like, they just need to get over it.
Well, and with the regard to Hollywood, that's kind of why I was also saying that conservatives need to I mean, they complain about Hollywood a lot, but we just need more people or more conservatives who've got the ability to start their own studios and stuff to get involved with entertainment, because it does have so much of an impact on culture. And, you know, for better or for worse, American culture is one of our biggest exports.
Well, you gotta look at it like this. All right, what's causing the culture to change? Why are there people afraid to speak up? It's because they'll lose their job, they'll lose their livelihood. Shame and ridicule will be heaved upon them by Twitter mobs. You know, we were talking about this, you know, the puritanical nature of the left and their attacks using shame and ridicule to silence people. And that's, you know, and I mentioned Yakov Smirnoff in the last segment, you know, and that wasn't shame and ridicule. That was, you know, government edict in the Soviet Union telling you what you can and can't talk about. One day we're going to wake up and we're not going to be able to say anything that's funny. And then, you know, our children aren't going to know the difference between, you know, the black white supremacist from Dave Chappelle and jokes about toast.
Well, now, one thing I did want to bring up that's related to entertainment, but really isn't political. I was going to mention it. William Shatner went to space, and, you know, I watched that. William Shatner, famous as James T. Kirk. You know, I'm an old Star Trek fan, and I always liked Captain Kirk.
Yeah, the second best captain of the Enterprise.
Well, I know you're Picard. I've always been and you know, that's kind of always been like a perpetual debate with Trekkies, who is better.
Well, and now Elon Musk is going to send Picard to space in a better ship.
But you know, it's kind of, you know. Growing up here, space has always been kind of a, you know, whether you're involved in the space industry or not, just the whole concept of space and our race to the moon, and also just, you know, all the things related to the space industry. It's kind of a unique part of Huntsville and North Alabama culture.
Yeah, well, you know, and the government spent a whole lot of money in Huntsville, you know, designing rockets with Nazis several years ago. And there's a museum to it in Huntsville now. And that's pretty much what the government space program is. It's a bureaucratic museum of what used to be great and wonderful about the space program in the United States and defeating the Ruskies.
Well, you know, here's the thing. It is interesting to me anyway to see the move towards, we've got a lot of different companies that are now,
they're suckling the government teats what they're doing now. They're not doing anything productive.
Well, I mean, but there's still a lot of essentially progress being made in the space race. But I do find it ironic that a lot of it is now, Didn't
you just see where the Chinese sent this hypersonic ballistic missile all around the world, and we have no technology to match that? We're losing ground. We have a museum to what the space race used to be here, and we still think it's reality, and it's not.
Well,
that's why we're sending a 90-year-old geezer into space into a ship that didn't explode. I was expecting James T. Kirk's ship to explode, and then him to run off and get onto a different ship, and then fly back down to Earth, and it didn't happen. And Bezos is kind of disappointing for not letting that happen. So.
Well, it was still a moment that
Even save the Earth, man. I mean, what?
as anyone can tell, Anson is a man of satire, so he is being very satirical here. But it wasn't a fascinating moment and everything. And again, just being from the Huntsville area, I think it catches a lot of people's imagination. And it was actually, for Jeff Bezos, actually, it really was a big.
That was a huge marketing ploy
for him. Because, there's been kind of an interesting competition between Jeff Bezos and Elon Musk on their respective space companies and everything.
Musk is a master of getting subsidies from the government. Man, that guy knows how to work a politician. I tell you what.
Hanson, if he calls in, well, I'm going to let you talk with him.
Well, that sounds great.
But, so I just wanted to kind of throw that out on the show today, just simply because I don't think I got a chance to mention it last week and everything. But it was just kind of an interesting point. And otherwise, it's been kind of some depressing weeks on the
– Well, hold on now. What's your favorite Star Trek movie, now that we're talking about, the greatest cinema ever made?
Oh, man. I think the Undiscovered Country was probably the best.
I like First Contact. That was my favorite.
There was about – I think either 6 or 7 made with the original Enterprise and stuff. And
the one Leonard Nimoy produced with the whales, where they come to San Francisco go back in time. Was that the Undiscovered? That wasn't Undiscovered.
No, that was not. Undiscovered Country was, I think, 5.
Yeah, I think I'm talking about 6.
Yeah.
Oh, man, yeah, talking to the whales, Leonard Nimoy.
Now we are really getting into kind of some Trekking talk, and we're probably losing half the audience.
Met Leonard Nimoy one time in Huntsville. They had a Star Trek convention back in the 90s and at the BBC, and I met Leonard Nimoy down there. It was one of the most exciting times of my life. He did the finger thing. You know mm-hmm. what I'm talking about?
I will say this. I bet if Leonard Nimoy had still been alive, because I think he passed away about 5 years ago, I could almost see him going up with William Shatner in that. I could almost say they might have arranged for both of them to go up at once. That's why, for Trek fans, I think it was an exciting moment. I do think it was an exciting moment because it is moving us more towards the commercialization of space, and also towards the fact that more and more people who are non-astronauts will be able to go there someday. Now, that may be still years away, but I look at it as a small historic step.
Did you know that William Shatner covered Rocket Man with spoken word and an acoustic guitar?
No, I did not.
He should have brought his guitar up there. I don't know why he didn't do that.
Well, I will say this too, to be 90 years old, that is very impressive.
So he's a spry 90-year-old.
I hope at 90 I'm that good.
Yeah, I remember George H.W. Bush doing he'd do parachute launches. He'd mm-hmm. jump out of an airplane with a parachute on until
he did that even into his late 90s. And it seems like he actually did. He do it on D-Day or on his birthday? I cannot remember.
I think it was his birthday. But William Shatner's the same kind of spry. He's gonna live forever. I don't know why. I guess it's, he didn't look any older either. His face ain't wrinkled at all, man. I want some of that Hollywood stuff. What is that they were talking about, the Pizzagate stuff, where they mm-hmm. like bleed children and the celebrities or whatever, all that crazy conspiracy theory stuff?
He's going to keep doing a lot of stuff for years to come. So that's very impressive and everything. But
if I mention Pizzagate, do you get knocked off the air? Is that against the rules?
I think most people would probably not know what.
Okay,
that
good,
is
good. Yeah, that I do not believe in conspiracy theories, and Shannon doesn't endorse any of my statements.
But But yeah, I wanted to mention that, and I knew you were kind of into Star Trek too. And I, again, it was just a good moment. But also, again, for Huntsville itself, with our tying into a lot of this, the space industry, I think a lot of people, especially here in Huntsville, you know, look at that.
Three generations of my family have worked on the arsenal. Some of them, you know, program missiles now, do missile mm-hmm. defense stuff. My dad worked for NASA. You know, I'm right
so
there.
So you kind of got the connection.
Yeah. Oh yeah, my grandfather was a chemist on the arsenal when Von Braun was carted out there. Okay. You know, yeah, I understand all that.
All right. Well, let's take a break. We're going to be right back with more here at Politics. Well, we're going to talk about something next that is being a big issue, and that is supply chain problems, and also the inflation that's going on.
Economics.
Yes. All right. Let's take a break. We'll be right back here on Politics and More. All right, we're back with Politics and More, and we'll have a lot of different issues discussed, and we're talking about those with Anson Knowles. Anson actually used to have a show out here that, an hour before I came on. Anson, remember that?
No, that was back when I was a libertarian. I have reformed my ways, and I am now a Liberty Republican, which means that I get frustrated with all the rhinos in the party. No offense to all your guests that come that are rhinos.
Well, as you know, Anson, I'm very conservative Republican, but I do remember the time when you were in more of the libertarian mindset. So now your views are a little bit kind of, I would almost say, a little bit of conglomeration of libertarian and Republican.
I've learned to moderate the way that I say things and do things, because
you use a lot of satire, and I don't know if a lot of people understand that or not.
Yeah, most people can't understand, you know, the radical reduction in government that needs to happen to maintain the freedom that we've enjoyed and the wealth that we've had as a nation, and so I moderate what I say a little bit, you know.
Yeah, and you know, the term Liberty Republican, which you use, that's actually more and more used by a lot of people, isn't it?
Yeah, it's like conservative. You know, it was overused for a really long time, and you know, even Mitt Romney could call himself a severe conservative. Mm-hmm. I don't remember, he was asked what kind of conservative you are when he was running for president. He said, "I'm a severe conservative," and you know, it's
I don't know what that
would mean. Nobody knew what it meant, because he didn't know what it meant, because the word had no meaning anymore, because mm-hmm. so many different people used it. And I think there's a danger that people use that with liberty, and it means something very specific. It means, you know, get the government out of the everything.
Well, it's almost that's why I was kind of mentioning this. It's almost an amalgamation of libertarian and Republican thought. Would you?
Yeah, it's
kind of almost describe it that way.
Yeah, it's a right libertarian thought as opposed to a right authoritarian thought, which most Republicans are right authoritarian, and there's a select few that are right libertarian.
I remember you went to I guess you called it a Liberty Republican event in the Dakotas.
Oh, yeah, Freedom Fest. Yeah, Mike Lee was one of the speakers. Christy Noem, Larry Elder was there. There were a whole bunch of people there up in South Dakota for Freedom Fest in July. It was great. Went with Ed Henry from here, and we worked a booth for the Alabama Freedom Pack, which is still up and running. If you want to, you know, Google Alabama Freedom Pack and give some money to candidates who are running for the Alabama State House that are going to be small government Republicans. They really need your support.
And just want to give kind of a little bit of background.
You're really hemming me in, huh? You keep rolling off with these questions. I can't act crazy no more. No, keep on going. Keep on going.
Anthony is drinking an energy drink here, so he's hopped up and ready to go here. But, you know, Anson's background is essentially economic issues. I mean, he's an accountant and has a long history of working the finance industry. And, you know, at the beginning of the show, one of the things I was talking about is the economy. And ultimately in politics, most people vote based on economic matters. Would you agree with that, Anson?
They vote based on what they see the last 2 weeks before the election, based on the talking points that are presented to them. But yes, economics are extremely important because none of those talking points matter if you don't have enough food to eat.
Yeah, that's the thing. And I remember back, I believe it was when Clinton first ran for office, and remember they had that
it's the economy,
it's the economy stupid. And that ultimately has kind of reverberated for many years in elections. I mean, it certainly came about, you know, when Obama first ran, there was a lot of bad economic problems going on at that time frame. And then President Trump really got the economy going, and now within quite literally 9 months of Joe Biden taking the presidency, the economy is, I mean, I wouldn't say it's collapsed, but, you know, we have now inflation, we have supply chain issues, we have issues with gas has gone up. There's just a whole wide range of issues, and I think generally economists are probably a little bit apprehensive of whether our economic engine's about to slow down, collapse, or something in between.
Well, yeah, I mean, we've had a steady 5% inflation each month for the past several months, you know, and it's unsustainable, the trajectory that we're on right now. And the way that the government spending goes on both sides of the aisle in Washington, D.C., you know, they act like, you know, $30 trillion is that's about where we are in national debt. They act like reducing the deficit, which means we're still overspending, from the highest point last year to the second highest point this year is actually an achievement, when in reality it's unsustainable. And the, most people don't understand the economic reality, how money's created, what the Federal Reserve Bank is and its relationship to the entire process, and the fact that they're not really a governmental agency and they're printing money like crazy to prop up the economy. And they did it under Trump too. It's not a single party issue.
Well, and you know, that's the issue of the national debt is an issue that we are going to have to face for years to come here in America. And there's been a lot of people who worry about that. Of course, they're all on the right side of the political aisle. I don't think I could.
Well, let me give you a really good quote from a prominent Republican president. And you mentioned the time period already. Yep. I've abandoned free market principles to save the free market system. George W. Bush, during the 2008 financial crisis, and he basically set the table. Look, the Republicans, you know, they're not principled, and you know, it's really terrible. And I call myself a Republican, and you know, I vote Republican, and because there's not a viable alternative. But the what we have going right now with the inflation and you know, you hear in the news things like, you know, GDP's gone up. What is GDP? Gross domestic product. Nobody knows what that is, how that's calculated, what that actually means. All GDP means is that people are spending more on stuff, right?
Yeah.
And they're spending more on stuff because there's inflation, not because there's actual new stuff being made that's, you know, in higher quantity, and there's new wealth being created. It's the exact opposite, actually. Things just cost more.
Yeah.
And so the elected, you know, intelligentsia, the people that are smarter than everybody else are going around telling people, hey, look, you know, your lives are better, when in reality what you actually feel is you go to the gas station and you pay twice as much for gas as you did a year ago. And so they're trying to feed you a lie, and I don't know if if the elected class understands that you know, there's going to be a problem at the next election cycle.
Well, unfortunately, federal spending has gotten tied so closely to, you know, essentially almost like votes, that it's kind of I see it continuing. I don't know. You know, we think $30 trillion right now is a lot of money, but I could almost say, Anson, in 10 years from now, we owe in $40 trillion or $45 trillion. I mean, I don't see it going away.
Okay, so the only reason why we can do that as a country...
Because of what country?
No, it's because we're the reserve currency of the world. Mm-hmm. The dollar is used by countries all around the world as a medium of exchange in their own countries and between countries. And that has not always been that way.
Okay, and it changes in history. So when that changes, we will no longer be able to steal the wealth from other countries through inflation, because that's what happens when you inflate the currency. You devalue the currency, and you take every time you print that new money and give it to somebody else, which is what the Federal Reserve does. They take they print money and give it to somebody. You increase the wealth of the people that receive that money first and decrease the wealth of everyone else. And it's an unsustainable system. We're not going to get to a lot higher than what we are now, because we're having inflation every time we print money. And eventually it's going to reach a head, like it did during the Continental era in the United States when we inflated our currency, like the Weimar Republic in the 1920s. Eventually it's going to come crashing down, because the bill is going to come due.
And you know, you bring up the Weimar Republic, but that's has always kind of a just before the Nazi era. That's always a classic example.
Well, it's happened here too. The continental
inflation. Yeah, you have to have bucket loads of cash to pay for stuff, because your cash is essentially worthless.
Yeah, and actually, I printed out a stack of stuff here, and I usually don't like to read on the radio, but my favorite economist. Do you have a favorite economist?
No.
Normal people don't have a favorite economist, right?
Well, remember, y'all, Anson is an accountant, so this is his thing.
Yeah. So my favorite economist, Ludwig von Mises. Mm-hmm. There's actually at Auburn, Alabama, something called the Mises Institute, mm-hmm. and it's a think tank dedicated to Austrian economics that was a branch of economics practiced by Ludwig von Mises, who was in Austria during the Weimar Republic time, when the Austrian currency became devalued and the German currency became devalued. And he explains very, very succinctly in his book Human Action, which is like a 1,000-page economics textbook. Have you read that before? Man, it is spellbinding. You should read Human Action. Anyway, so he goes into what actually happens when the public actually realizes that their currency is worthless, and there's a churning over, and people just rush out and start buying everything that they can, and the acceleration of the moving of money is really what causes, and it could happen in the matter of days. Mm-hmm. And we don't know when it's going to happen. We don't know if we got another 10 years or 5 days, you know. So yeah. it's kind of scary. So it's called a crack up boom. That's the technical term for it.
Well, and you know, I think in Venezuela, we've seen kind of the last few years kind of an example.
Yeah, they've
of
had what a crack up boom. Yeah,
when you have that massive inflation, and you know, maybe right now people have noticed the inflation, but you know, it hasn't reached the hyperinflation that we're thinking about, and hopefully it will not. But you know, these are kind of issues that
you've talked about the culture, right? Mm-hmm. In the last segment, we talked about the culture. There's a culture within the intelligentsia, within the economic class, that thinks that the modern monetary theory, which is it's all right for the government to print as much money as they want. There's a culture that says that it's all right to inflate the currency like this. And they're wrong, because they think that they've developed a new system, a new way of doing things, when in reality, this has all been done before. They're just irresponsible.
You know, if someone really wants to kind of delve into the ideas of money supply and how much government should or should not print, I mean, issue we're kind of talking about on the radio today, this has actually been debated for most of American history. You know, we actually want a gold standard for many years, and that was a very big point of contention when we finally went off the gold standard.
Well, this has been a conversation throughout human history.
Yeah,
not just in the American history, but whenever the king would devalue the currency, the peasants would rise up and chop his head off. Mm-hmm. Well, we can't do that here, you know, because we're a civil society. Yeah. We're not going to rise up and storm the Capitol and burn it down, and we're just going to go there and take selfies.
But the issue of how much a government should or should not print, it's not a new issue, but it is an issue that's becoming more and more relevant to us today, and it's going to be affecting everybody's pocketbook, especially over the next couple of years. And I think it'll be probably an issue in the midterms next year. So let's take a quick break. We're going to be back with more here at Politics and More. Stay tuned. All right, we're back at Politics and More, and I'm Shannon Moore, your host here at Politics and More, and we have joining us today Anton Knowles. Anton's a longtime political activist. He's also an accountant, and his background really is finance. And so we've had kind of a far-ranging talk so far with you, Anton. We've gone from Hollywood and culture to Captain Kirk to debt and monetary theory here.
Let's talk about Leonard Nimoy and the ballad Bilbo Baggins. Man, that that single was awesome. You can get it on vinyl and laugh at how ridiculous Leonard Nimoy was.
All right, so just before the break, we were kind of talking about the United States debt and the issue of the U.S. printing so much money, but also just we're going to see a lot of these issues come up during the midterms next year, and we're going to kind of get into that the second half of the show. We want to talk about the supply chain shortages, because that's an issue we have not seen, and we're going to keep talking about the issue of inflation.
Inflation is directly related to the supply chain issue. They're the same issue, because we've been printing money, but you can't print goods. Mm-hmm. And so when you create a currency that has no value, nothing of value has been exchanged for it, it just appears out of thin air, the supply chain is necessarily going to become disrupted, because people have to pay more money for the goods to be transported and delivered and purchased. I mean, this entire issue is caused by the Federal Reserve.
And, you know, the issue of the debt, I mean, it's not going to go away. I don't see it going away. And, you know, there have been politicians on both sides of the aisle who've ignored it. It's more ignored on the left than it is on the right. But either way, there's not a lot of voices that are often raised about the issue of the American debt. And again, we're seeing it, as you pointed out, Anson, with
the debt rises at the same rate no matter which party's in power.
Yeah. And so now we're at 30. Did you say 30 trillion?
Yeah, it's almost 30 trillion. It's not quite 30.
And, you know, a lot of people point out, and there is a lot of truth to this, Anson. I mean, you know, in personal finance, we often talk about, well, a person shouldn't go into too much debt, because eventually you're not even paying the debt down. You're just paying for the interest.
Well, and the Federal Reserve is going to run into a problem. Because eventually they can't just print money anymore, because interest rates will necessarily have to rise. And when that happens, the interest to service the sovereign debt of the United States will be so much that it will consume the entire budget, and then the system will collapse.
Yeah. So,
and that's not too far away, because the interest rates have been rising no matter how much the Fed has done to keep them down. It's not something that is imaginary. It's a reality of the situation.
Yeah. And so we've got an issue that is going to greatly impact the American economy over the years. And as you pointed out, and it is correct, that the American dollar has kind of been the dollar of the world almost.
Yeah, it's the reserve currency of the world, yeah.
But we now have another country, and I'm talking about China, which is going to be essentially buying for that, I think. I mean, do you see that going that way?
Well, no, actually, I see what's going on in El Salvador is more important.
And kind of give our listeners a little bit of idea of what you mean by that.
Well, El Salvador decided that they were going to accept the dollar as their, you know, reserve currency, mm-hmm. just like a lot of other countries. But now they've got a dual currency called Bitcoin.
And so you could see that is
China. China has made the use of Bitcoin illegal.
Well, yeah, they are trying to keep their centralized kind of financial system,
right? But you they're not going to be able to control what happens all over the world with this. People are going to, you know, when the dollar collapses, I really think that large transactions between, you know, companies, you know, when you're buying oil and things like that, Bitcoin's a much more suitable means of exchange when you're dealing with those large transactions. So I think that El Salvador is just, you know, it's the canary in the coal mine. You know, if the United States decides to invade it and, you know, topple their dictator like they do with a lot of other countries that, you know, get rid of the dollar, then of course, you know, then the whole system will fall apart again. But yeah, you know they did that. You know the United States, whenever a country you know no longer uses the dollar as a reserve currency, they magically get invaded.
Well, you know, You mentioned you can see the dollar collapsing, Anson. Now, I don't think you mean like truly collapsing, but
no, I mean collapsing.
Well, when would you actually see that?
Oh, I don't know. I'm not a fortune teller, but you can't spend the way that we are and have it be sustainable. Mo Brooks has been talking about this for years and years. Mo Brooks has said that the greatest threat to our national security is our debt.
Yeah.
And he has a degree in economics from Duke. He's much more well-versed in economics than, you know, a backbencher like me.
Yeah.
And he's absolutely right. This is the greatest threat to our national security. Not only does it make us, you know, dependent upon other countries like China to buy our debt, but it makes us weak.
Yeah, and Mo's done a very good job of bringing that
up. Oh, hey, Mo Brooks for Senate.
Yes. He's done a very good job of bringing up the issue of the debt. Because I've seen him speak about it. You know, he'll have a chart and everything. And the debt is going to continue. And we got the midterms coming up next year. I'm sure it will be emphasized and probably especially emphasized if this $3 trillion or more budget President Biden's gets passed. I don't know if that's going to happen or not. It may be more, actually, Anson.
You know, and there's one, we're talking politics a little bit, mentioning Mo there, but there's one congressional candidate, John Roberts, who actually wrote an article about the inflation, referencing exactly what you're talking about the spending programs that the mm-hmm. Democrats are putting forward and talking about the unsustainability of it. And John Roberts said that we cannot sustain this misuse of our tax dollars. Joe Biden, Nancy Pelosi, Chuck Schumer won't be around to deal with the problem. It'll be my generation, the next tool, who'll be left to pay the tab. And, you know, we've been saying that for years and years and years. You know, politicians have been blaming the other party. And you know, eventually the bill's going to come due. And these politicians that we're relying on to be smart, and the people at the Federal Reserve who are smarter than us, the Janet Yellen types, mm-hmm. you know, it's going to all fall apart whether or not they want it to or not.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. Definitely. So that's a... Well, and like I said, the second half of the show, we're going to keep kind of delving into some of these issues, because these are some issues, one, that we have not necessarily seen in America in a while. You know, a lot of people are starting to now compare the Biden administration to the Carter administration.
It's got very similar aspects to both of them. But one of them is what happened was we got off the gold standard in the early 70s, and it caused the interest rates to rise, and the Democrats didn't know how to deal with it because they're economic idiots.
Mm. Well, it does seem ironic enough that most of the time that the economy doesn't really thrive under them, does it, Anson?
Well, yeah, and that's another thing from the John Roberts article I was talking about on Yellowhammer News. You know, he's running for Congress, and he's got an economics background too, and he was talking about the top 10, you know, economic states in the country are run by Republicans, and the bottom 10 are run by Democrats.
Yeah, go figure. All right, let's take a quick break. We're going to be back with more here at Politics and More. Stay tuned.